Good morning. Thank you very much for having me. When Amy approached me about giving a talk, it was a little bit difficult to try and figure out how to introduce my life and how I've ended up where I am. I thought the best way was just, I've made all of my decisions in life simply by following my own inner truth, and so that's what I'm going to talk about today. Has anybody ever been here? Bonneville Salt Flats? You should go. It is amazing. That's a longer story, but it's beautiful. You should go there. One of the things that's really interesting to me is everything has relativity. And so when I say following truth, what is true is my truth is different than yours. And when you look up truth in the dictionary, the quality or state of being true, which we would all say, huh? And so I also included the definition of true. But talking to architecture students, one of the things that I think is important for students to realize when I'm working with them is we all have our own inner monologues going on. So if I say red shoe, everybody in this room has a different idea of what that red shoe is in their mind. And if we drew them out, or if we found a picture of what a red shoe is, there would be really interesting differences. So I originally grew up in upstate New York. That is me as a little child, being tickled by my grandmother and my mom standing there enjoying that. I am an upstate New York snob. So let's just get that out of the way. Most people say that this is upstate New York. That's Western New York. The Adirondack Park is where I grew up. That's upstate, and it's a really beautiful place. There's a lot of rules so that no big box stores can be built there. I grew up on a forestry college campus called Paul Smith's, and it was 14,000 acres, and it was 13 miles from the nearest town. So most of my time was spent with that black lab, running through the woods and having a good time. Upstate. Okay. I admit I'm an upstate snob. Growing up in that house, there are a couple things that I'm not going to go too much into depth into, but my mom and I moved in with my grandparents. It was a dysfunctional alcoholic home, and there were a lot of issues at play. It led to me acting out, and my adolescent years were very difficult. So those were some of the things that I did. I got into a lot of trouble. By the age of 15, I was in the Department of Social Services custody of New York State. And from 15 until 21, I was a ward of the court. So it was a very interesting path, and I got to experience a lot of different things. So at 21, I was able to make the decision. Well, before 21, I was able to make the decision to go to college. That's me when I first moved to Montana. So I was here before Walmart. Just want to make that clear, too. I arrived in 1997. That was a picture that a friend took of me, and it always makes people laugh. So in New York, I went to three different colleges, and I didn't understand what I was doing. At first, when I was going to college, New York State was paying my tuition, which was amazing. And most people would be like, oh, party time. Well, I was taking it very seriously, and I couldn't figure out what I wanted to do. The last community college I went to, Clinton Community College, there was a woman who asked me what my interests were, and I said music and art. And she said, well, have you ever thought of architecture? And I remember as a kid walking into a bookstore in the mall with my mom, and there was a really large book laid out, you know, low down for the kids, and a sort of a centerfold image of this beautiful house in the forest, like where I grew up, and a waterfall. And it was, you know, Frank Lloyd Wright's Falling Water. And I said, yeah, architecture, sure, I'll do that. And by that point, I was paying for my education, and I needed to get through college pretty quick. Master's degree sounded like it would be a good salary or profession. So there were three schools that had a five-year master's program, and MSU was one of them. And MSU had a lot of snow and mountains, so I came to Montana. When I was going through the university, one of the moments of clarification that I have was my mom worked for a company. She had three college degrees. She worked for a company in upstate New York called American Management Association. And she had worked there for, I think, 19 years. And then one day somebody came in and they said, you no longer have a job. You have an hour to clean out your desk. And that was it. And at that moment, and seeing what she went through after that, I basically made the decision that no company or individual would ever have that much control of my life, ever. And if I had to do dishes, that would be fine. But I saw how it destroyed her, and I didn't want to ever experience that. So in the School of Architecture, in my fourth year in 2001, I traveled to Europe. Traveled to Europe for 3 months, and I went to 28 cities in 13 countries. And honestly, before I went to Europe, I had no idea what I was doing in architecture. I worked really hard, and that made it, I got good grades, but I didn't really know what I was doing. When I was in Europe, I walked into these three spaces, and it absolutely changed my life. Walking into these three spaces brought me to tears. And it sort of changed my perspective of space and what I wanted to actually do. So the Pantheon, Ronchamp Chapel, I played didgeridoo in there. I couldn't play didgeridoo in the Pantheon, but and then the Tower of Exile. If you ever go to Europe, please go to those three spaces. They will change your life. So through that experience, I was coming back to Montana to start work on my master's degree research. And when I was an adolescent, I was in a group rehabilitation program for 21 months. And while I was there, I saw over 150 kids come and go. One of the things that was consistent was as soon as a kid was brought into the facility, they were placed on drugs as a means of control. And I never understood why that was the case. I was like, well, not everybody needs medication. And I realized that when I was 17. So after I was brought to tears by these three spaces, I made the decision that I was going to devote my research, focusing on psychological effects of space and group rehabilitation programs in an effort to minimize the medication that adolescents are prescribed.
That's so cool. Sorry.
Thank you. It was the most passionate thing I've ever been engaged in, and I loved every minute of it. So while I was in graduate school, I was a teaching assistant because that was made my tuition cheaper. But early professionally, I was a teaching assistant. I worked in a few firms in Boston, part-time teaching at Boston Architectural College, worked in a residential and commercial firm, and then I moved back to Bozeman and started teaching at the School of Architecture. When I got out of school, my goal was to practice architecture. It was to become licensed, and it was to become published, because that was the thing. Like, I wanted to be an architectural record, and I wanted to be a big deal. The truth was, being licensed and published does not necessarily constitute good design. It doesn't constitute environmentally responsible design or being a good steward of the profession or the client. And I made that decision really early on, within the first 4 years of being in architecture firms, and it caused me a lot of pain. Because it was like everything that I ever wanted was falling apart. And so I needed to figure out something else. Another moment that I had was I was working in a local architecture firm here in Bozeman. And I've worked on several homes that are $10 million or more. We all know those houses. I was working on a house in the Yellowstone Club. And most of those houses, because of their size, are all steel frame structures. And so I was drawing the structure. I was drawing a section of the house, the great room, that was all steel frame. And when I got to, so you could see the steel in the drawing, and then I actually had to draw a log. I had to draw a log that was hollowed out that would go over a piece of steel. And in that moment, I said, you know, I refuse to accept that a tree grows for 300 years only to cover up a piece of steel that it doesn't need to. At that point, I was like, okay, architecture might not be working for me. So teaching seemed like the most it was the best choice for me, and it seemed the most innocent, I guess. And it brought everything that I was ever interested in together. Psychology, sociology, design, you know, to be able to understand a person quickly enough to then have the ability to address them and figure out the labyrinth or the path that the information needs to go into their brain. I love that. That's no different than putting a building together. And so, yeah, I very much fell in love with teaching. So my goal was to become a tenured faculty, because that's what university professors do. Then I realized that tenure does not represent excellence as an educator. It does not mean someone is caring, considerate, compassionate, empathetic, wise, professional, honest, or modeling what it means to follow one's passion. And all of those things were my truth, and I needed that in my life. So then I made the decision, sure, I'll start a business. I can do that. So my new path is to teach and design and to make. I teach design fundamentals to all ages. I've worked with kids as young as kindergartners with glass. A gasp, okay. Kindergartners in glass, imagine that, let that sink in. I got into art, and I started exploring art as a means of architectural exploration too, because I'm sure we've all had this experience where you see a building and you're like, that's not very good. And you don't have to have a degree to have that opinion. Well, I use art and making things at a manageable scale as a means of not making really bad decisions when it gets blown up. So all of the decisions that I make, I see no different than a building. And so that's how I use art. And also as a way of understanding myself and the world and a lot of different things. So I want to design architecture, sculpture, art, make anything within my means, and enhance lives at every scale. Kindergartners to adults, art to buildings. And my truths are owning a business is challenging, not easy for introverts. Never know what each day will bring, which is good. And it's a challenge to define what I do. Like, I meet people, and becoming a business owner, everybody says, well, you need to have an elevator pitch. And I'm like, I'm a guy that does stuff, and I'm really passionate. It's tough to, like, wear the educator hat, wear the architecture hat, and wear the artist hat. That's me in Scotland. I brought architecture students to Scotland 4 times to explore glass with 3 other universities from around the world, and it's been a great experience. So my truth, enhance lives, teach, design, make, unite psychology, design, fabrication, respect our environment, solve problems only after understanding issues at hand, never be bored, because I don't know how people get bored. There's no reason ever that anybody should be bored. Be able to bring my dog to work, that's really important. I have another black lab, she's smaller, a different name. I want to model respect, moral and ethical decision making, help others find their own voice, find and follow passion, seek and cherish those who inspire me, and learn every day. So those are my goals currently. That is Hagia Sophia, in Istanbul, Turkey. I got to take architecture students there. That was a space that I never thought in my life I would ever be able to stand in. And it just so happened that there was a cat hanging out there that day, and it made for a really beautiful picture. So those are some of the schools that I've worked with. I grew up in upstate New York. We only had two channels on the TV. One was Canadian, French-Canadian, Québécois. And then the other one was NBC. Well, we had PBS sometimes. But I always watched Little House on the Prairie. And the one-room schoolhouses blew me away. I was like, that can't happen. And then I came out to Montana, and it happens. And I've had two one-room schoolhouses in my studio. And it's been an incredible thing to watch. It's like a really big family and a really beautiful interaction. So one of the things that I do is I go after large public commissions because I want to integrate art into architecture, and I want to enhance lives. Well, this is a project that I went after in Salt Lake City. It was for the Utah School for the Deaf and Blind. It was a $106,000 commission, and they wanted art. And I said, I can do that. So I submitted a proposal. I was one of four finalists. They flew me down to make the presentation, and I just wanted to go through an abridged version of that for you so that you can see kind of where I approach things. Each celestial body, in fact, each and every atom produces a particular sound on account of its movement, its rhythm or vibration. All of these sounds and vibrations form a universal harmony in which each element, while having its own function and character, contributes to the whole. In approaching the project for the School for the Deaf and Blind, I grew up, my mom taught me American Sign Language, so I knew that early on. And I did a lot of research to try and understand this community and figure out a way to approach them. And the next video is short, but it'll give you an understanding of how I began that. Okay, so the reason that I was using Cymatics was I was trying to figure out a way, because there's a school for the deaf and a school for the blind, and they were separated in their building. They were on different wings for a lot of logistical reasons, and it just made it easier to sort of manage those two populations. I wanted to find a way to bring those two communities together as an experience at the beginning of the day and at the end of the day. And so sound and music are the universal language, and I wanted to use sound and music to bring these people together. And even though, you know, the deaf can't hear, they can feel, and it was really important to me to affect all of the senses in the same way that good architecture should. So my proposal was to utilize Cymatics and create three-dimensional geometries in glass, polycarbonate acrylic, and milled wood that the children could engage with every day. And I'll just walk you through the building. So the entry, it was a long entry. There were two very tall, vertical, very red stair towers on each end, and that's where the students would come in the morning. So this would be the entry here, and then this is sort of an airlock, and then they come in, and this would be one of the first walls that they experience. This would be, they would walk behind that to go to a school, and then this is the front desk. Each of those panels is a cymatic pattern, and they're all completely white, so they would be sort of neutral in tone. And there would be the repetition would allow them to sort of get kind of settled into I'm going to school and that experience. These are some of the patterns that the architect had used in different parts of the building that I also wanted to potentially think about. This is a three-dimensional model showing that entry. And you know, in architecture, one of the most important things is understanding the environment and where the sun is coming from and how to bring that into the space to enhance the experience. So these were studies of the sun angle in relationship to its the building's orientation. You can see when you look down here, that's the beginning of one of the walls. That's the backside of another wall, and then the entry desk is in the center. So I was thinking of these two walls as gateways or thresholds into the school. And in the same way that I was thinking of wooden blocks, like children love wooden blocks and they love the tactile and the colors. Like there's something on every wooden block that a child is attracted to, whether it's the texture, the color, or even just the patterns. And so I wanted to use these two walls in that way. They were going to be large wooden blocks that they could touch and play with every single day and learn something new and explore. So this is looking, all of these letters are basically saying, whether it's glass, acrylic, or wood, obviously, once you get above head level, then it becomes less tactile, and so I took some of the detail out of it. So on one side, it would be really detailed on the side that the kids go to school, and then on the other side, the side that's facing the entry desk, would be a halftone pattern basically representing which school that is. And so this would be the school for the deaf using sign language. The colors are different, as you can see, between the school of the deaf and the school of the blind. And so the school of the blind, same thing, inverted, different patterns, different design, but it is very much about the hand and the tactile. Here you can see, so this is a floor plan. This is one of the walls that I designed, another wall, that's the entry desk. And then on either side, you can see the five panels that help bring people into the space. This is a section showing the full length of that space and how it all lays out in relationship to scale. It's a rendering of the entry desk. Everything in this building was red, so these were therapy rooms. They were all really, really red glass. Red is my least favorite color, but I was like, I can do this. What it allowed me to do is I didn't have to use any red because that was well taken care of. So you can kind of see the patterns that the kids would have access to on either side of the wall. And what I was hoping is that they could find themselves and they could uncover what they like the most. Or in the same way that some days we are happy and some days we aren't, they could find their happy place before they go to school. So that's a perspective of the entry desk and the back side of the walls. So I was trying to communicate the ease at which people would understand which side was which. This would be exiting the school of the blind. So right here is the entry desk. So this is coming out, and then you would walk that way. These are halftone patterns. One of the things, so if you mill plywood, one of the things that I wanted to show the panel was that you can mill plywood and you have a different experience very close up versus very far away. And so that's one of the things that I wanted to bring to the space as well, is that it's different close, and when you're far away, it communicates more. And so that's why those are all taken at varying distances. And if you don't see it, it's a guy with glasses. Does everyone see it? Okay, good. In architecture, one of the things that I love about architecture is we sort of have to find rationale or logic to the decisions we're making because we're spending a lot of money, a lot of somebody else's money, which I personally take incredibly seriously. And so I wanted to help them feel as comfortable as they could with my proposal. So I was tying everything together to the sedimentary layers of Utah and how you begin to carve into, like you make things three-dimensional. This is called fordite. Has anybody ever heard of fordite? It's basically the overspray of auto paint from the 60s and 70s. And so like in car manufacturers, they would overspray the paint. It would build up on pipes and then people would knock it off. Well, if you can imagine it, as soon as you carve into all of those layers, it creates a really beautiful texture. So that's fordite. It's not really a stone, it's actually just paint. And then that's milled plywood on the far right. And so this is exiting the elevator. You would be right behind the entry desk, and that would be the halftone pattern of the school for the deaf. And that is all I have. I put this photo up basically because I feel very lucky. I don't know where it comes from, but the older I get, the more I feel like a kindergartner. Like, I want to know everything about everything, and I want to touch and just learn. And I found this tricycle, and I was like, yeah, I could sit on that. That's actually in my studio. And most people, when they see me, don't think that I would fit on that. And so I use this image as like as a model of hopefully always stay young and inquisitive and ask questions. Thank you. Yes.
You said when you were young, your mom took the opportunity to teach you American Sign Language.
Yeah.
What was the thought process and reasoning there?
I think I had a lot of energy, and I think it was just a way for her to distract me from getting in trouble. I know as I've gotten older and gotten more connected to education, I recognize that there are studies now showing that children, before they can speak, can communicate through sign language, which I think is really, really beautiful. But it was just to keep my hands busy. Rather than,
how old were you when she started that?
Oh, I think I was probably 2 or 3. Yeah, I was really young.
I like your mom.
Thank you. Thank you. These are all projects that I've done, that I've worked on. I didn't really describe any of these because there's a whole lot of conceptual thought behind them, and I didn't want to bore you with all of those, the logic and the rules behind those things. I have 5 permanent installations on the campus of MSU, and some of them are here. Yes?
Does biology play a part in the glass
art? I think it does, yeah. I had an exhibit at the Emerson a couple of months ago, and it was called Biological Explorations, and some of the things that it was all about just exploring humans. So it was about psychology. I had Rorschach ink blots in glass. I'm really interested in the structure of the human body and bones. So there was a human spine in glass. And all of that is sort of drawn or connected to biomimicry. And have you ever heard of biomimicry? So biomimicry, it's a growing field, and as soon as people hear about it, they're like, why didn't I hear about this before? So biomimicry is basically looking to nature in the way that nature has solved problems for millions and millions of years in order to address our own problems. And so one of the things so Janine Benyus is the one who started it. Janine Benyus and the Biomimicry Institute are in Missoula, Montana. One of the first images she showed was an eagle, and the eagle was sort of soaring, and the feather on the end of its wing was vertical. Well, aeronautical engineers looked at that, and they realized that, you know, that vertical feather reduces drag by 15 to 20%. So if you go on an airplane and you see the wing up like this, it's because it reduces drag and it makes the planes more fuel efficient. There's other things like shark skin. shark skin does not allow bacteria to grow on it. And so we've started to develop that in surfaces within hospitals so that we're not using bleach and other chemicals to kill bacteria, but the surfaces themselves keep the bacteria from growing. And so, and all of this comes from architecture, because when I walk into a classroom to teach about design fundamentals, one of the things that's most important to me is that there is truth and there is precision. Like, nothing is sloppy. A dolphin looks the way that a dolphin looks because it works. And if it didn't work, it would be dead. I mean, the platypus is an exception. But, you know, if we look to nature in order to solve our own problems, I think we would be far better off because they are the perfect model. And as soon as we establish a more symbiotic relationship with nature, I think we'll be better as a society. I seek out projects like that. So I sought them out. I applied to be considered. So there was an RFQ, a request for qualifications. I basically sent them my CV, basically, this is what I'm thinking about for your project, and then I got shortlisted for the finals. I didn't get that project, which was unfortunate, but I learned a great deal from it. And in the last 3 weeks, I submitted another proposal for the School for the Deaf and Blind in Colorado. And it's a similar budget, and fingers crossed, I get it, because then I had a warm-up, and now I can, like, really knock him out with a good proposal. Yeah?
Can you talk a little bit about the thing you mentioned early on, which was the connection between space and the reduced use of drugs in adolescents?
Yeah. So some of the things, when I was in that group home, some of the things the kids were, well, I'll back up. I was prescribed Ritalin at a very early age. I think it was around 5 or 6. From 5 or 6 until 10, I was on Ritalin. I don't remember many of those years. We all know that Ritalin is a bad drug. And you know, some of the things that I found, so I went to, do you know the DSM, the Diagnostics Manual for Psychiatrists? So I used the DSM-4, or is it DSM-3? It was a while ago. It's basically a diagnostics manual to say, okay, this is your disorder, so attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. These are how it's represented in action. And, you know, this is kind of how we deal with it. So I went to that diagnostics manual as a way of finding a path to address the issues. Some of the biggest, most fundamental, like, common denominator issues were connection to our environment. The fact that if we can see outside windows, if we can see the passing of the day, our circadian rhythms are more in tune and we're actually more calm. And I brought that to a class. I taught a class of graduate architecture students a very similar thing, but I said, you choose the disorder. And some of them chose manic depression because that's what they had. Some of them chose schizophrenia because they knew somebody who had schizophrenia. And, you know, I said, okay, your goal is to design a meditation space for this person or this population. And at the end of the semester, you know, we were sort of talking about the semester, and they were all like, why did we not learn about this sooner? And it's interesting, because when I invited some professors to come to that review, and it became very clear why they didn't talk about it sooner, is because as soon as you talk about emotions, a lot of people get really uncomfortable and they shut down. As soon as you talk about sadness or anything, people are like, no, I'm not sad. There's no sadness here. And it's like, we're all humans. Like, let's talk about the issues at hand and live better because of it. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.